Chapter 105. Further Adventures of Captain Edward Cuttle, Mariner. Time, sure of foot and strong of will, had so pressed onward, that the year enjoined by the old instrument maker, as the term during which his friend should refrain from opening the sealed packet accompanying the letter he had left for him, was now nearly expired, and Captain Cuttle began to look at it, of an evening, with feelings of mystery and uneasiness. The captain, in his honor, would as soon have thought of opening the parcel 1 hour before the expiration of the term, as he would have thought of opening himself, to study his own anatomy. He merely brought it out, at a certain stage of his first evening pipe, laid it on the table, and sat gazing at the outside of it, through the smoke, in silent gravity, for 2 or 3 hours at a spell. Sometimes, when he had contemplated it thus for a pretty long while, the captain would hitch his chair, by degrees, farther and farther off, as if to get beyond the range of its fascination. But if this were his design, he never succeeded. For even when he was brought up by the parlor wall, the packet still attracted him, or if his eyes, in thoughtful wandering, roved to the ceiling or the fire, its image immediately followed, and posted itself conspicuously among the coals, or took up an advantageous position on the whitewash. In respect of heart's delight, the captain's parental and admiration knew no change. But since his last interview with Mr. Carker, Captain Cuttle had come to entertain doubts whether his former intervention in behalf of that young lady and his dear boy Waller had proved altogether so favorable as he could have wished, and as he at the time believed. The captain was troubled with a serious misgiving that he had done more harm than good, in short, and in his remorse and modesty he made the best atonement he could think of, by putting himself out of the way of doing any harm to anyone, and, as it were, throwing himself overboard for a dangerous person. Self-buried, therefore, among the instruments, the captain never went near Mr. Dombey's house, or reported himself in any way to Florence or Miss Nipper. He even severed himself from Mr. Perch, on the occasion of his next visit, by dryly informing that gentleman that he thanked him for his company, but had cut himself adrift from all such acquaintance, as he didn't know what magazine he mightn't blow up, without meaning of it. In his self-imposed retirement, the captain passed whole days and weeks without interchanging a word with anyone but Rob the Grinder, whom he esteemed as a pattern of disinterested attachment and fidelity. In this retirement, the captain, gazing at the packet of an evening, would sit smoking, and thinking of Florence and poor Walter, until they both seemed to his homely fancy to be dead, and to have passed away into eternal youth, the beautiful and innocent children of his first remembrance. The captain did not, however, in his musings, neglect his own improvement, or the mental culture of Rob the Grinder. That young man was generally required to read out of some book to the captain, for 1 hour, every evening, and as the captain implicitly believed that all books were true, he accumulated, by this means, many remarkable facts. On Sunday nights, the captain always read for himself, before going to bed, a certain divine sermon once delivered on a mount. And although he was accustomed to quote the text, without book, after his own manner, he appeared to read it with as reverent an understanding of its heavenly spirit, as if he had got it all by heart in Greek, and had been able to write any number of fierce theological disquisitions on its every phrase. Rob the Grinder, whose reverence for the inspired writings, under the admirable system of the Grinder's school, had been developed by a perpetual bruising of his intellectual shins against all the proper names of all the tribes of Judah, and by the monotonous repetition of hard verses, especially by way of punishment, and by the parading of him at 6 years old in leather breeches, 3 times a Sunday, very high up, in a very hot church, with a great organ buzzing against his drowsy head, like an exceedingly busy bee. Rob the Grinder made a mighty show of being edified, when the captain ceased to read, and generally yawned and nodded, while the reading was in progress. The latter fact being never so much as suspected by the good captain. Captain Cuttle, also, as a man of business, took to keeping books. And he entered observations on the weather, and on the currents of the wagons and other vehicles, which he observed, in that quarter, to set westward in the morning, and during the greater part of the day, and eastward towards the evening. Two or three stragglers appearing in 1 week, who apostrophe spoke him, so the captain entered it on the subject of spectacles, and who, without positively purchasing, said they would look in again. The captain decided that the business was improving, and made an entry in the day book to that effect. The wind then blowing, which he first recorded, pretty fresh, west and by north, having changed in the night. One of the captain's chief difficulties was Mr. Toots, who called frequently, and who without saying much seemed to have an idea that the little back parlor was an eligible room to chuckle in, as he would sit and avail himself of its accommodations in that regard by the half hour together, without at all advancing in intimacy with the captain. The captain, rendered cautious by his late experience, was unable quite to satisfy his mind whether Mr. Toots was the mild subject he appeared to be, or was a profoundly artful and dissimulating hypocrite. His frequent reference to Miss Dombey was suspicious, but the captain had a secret kindness for Mr. Toots' apparent reliance on him, and forbore to decide against him for the present, merely eyeing him, with a sagacity not to be described, whenever he approached the subject that was nearest to his heart. Captain Gills, apostrophe blurted out Mr. Toots, one day all at once, as his manner was, do you think you could think favorably of that proposition of mine, and give me the pleasure of your acquaintance? ? Why, I tell you what it is, my lad, apostrophe replied the captain, who had at length concluded on a course of action, I've been turning that there, over. ? Captain Gills, it's very kind of you, ? retorted Mr. Toots. I'm much obliged to you. Upon my word and honor, Captain Gills, it would be a charity to give me the pleasure of your acquaintance. It really would. ? You see, brother, ? argued the captain slowly, I don't know you. But you never can know me. Captain Gills, ? replied Mr. Toots, steadfast to his point, if you don't give me the pleasure of your acquaintance. The captain seemed struck by the originality and power of this remark, and looked at Mr. Toots, as if he thought there was a great deal more in him than he had expected. Well said, my lad, ? observed the captain, nodding his head thoughtfully, and true. Now looky here. You've made some observations to me, which gives me to understand as you admire a certain sweet creature. Hey? ? Captain Gills, ? said Mr. Toots, gesticulating violently with the hand in which he held his hat, admiration is not the word. Upon my honor, you have no conception what my feelings are. If I could be dyed black, and made Miss Dombey's slave, I should consider it a compliment. If, at the sacrifice of all my property, I could get transmigrated into Miss Dombey's dog, I really think I should never leave off wagging my tail. I should be so perfectly happy, Captain Gills. ? Mr. Toots said it with watery eyes, and pressed his hat against his bosom with deep emotion. My lad, ? returned the captain, moved to compassion. If you're in earnest, Captain Gills, ? cried Mr. Toots, I'm in such a state of mind, and am so dreadfully in earnest, that if I could swear to it upon a hot piece of iron, or a live coal, or melted lead, or burning sealing wax, or anything of that sort, I should be glad to hurt myself, as a relief to my feelings. ? And Mr. Toots looked hurriedly about the room, as if for some sufficiently painful means of accomplishing his dread purpose. The captain pushed his glazed hat back upon his head, stroked his face down with his heavy hand, making his nose more mottled in the process, and planting himself before Mr. Toots, and hooking him by the lapel of his coat, addressed him in these words, while Mr. Toots looked up into his face, with much attention and some wonder. If you're in earnest, you see, my lad, apostrophe said the captain, you're object of clemency, and clemency is the brightest jewel in the crown of a Briton's head, for which you'll overhaul the constitution as laid down in Rule Britannia, and, when found, that is the charter as them garden angels was a singing of, so many times over. Stand by. This here proposal o' yourn takes me a little aback. And why? Because I holds my own only, you understand, in these here waters, and haven't got no consort, and maybe, don't wish for none. Steady. You hailed me first, along of a certain young lady, as you was chartered by. Now if you and me is to keep one another's company at all, that their young creature's name must never be named nor referred to. I don't know what harm mayn't have been done, by naming of it too free, afore now, and thereby I brings up short. Do you make me out pretty clear, brother? Apostrophe, well, you'll excuse me, Captain Gills, apostrophe replied Mr. Toots, if I don't quite follow you sometimes. But upon my word I it's a hard thing, Captain Gills, not to be able to mention Miss Dombey. I really have got such a dreadful load here. Apostrophe apostrophe Mr. Toots pathetically touched his shirt front with both hands, that I feel night and day, exactly as if somebody was sitting upon me. Them, apostrophe said the captain, is the terms I offer. If they're hard upon you, brother, as mayhap they are, give them a wide berth, sheer off, and part company cheerily. Apostrophe apostrophe, Captain Gills, apostrophe returned Mr. Toots, I hardly know how it is, but after what you told me when I came here, for the first time, I feel, that I'd rather think about Miss Dombey in your society than talk about her in almost anybody else's. Therefore, Captain Gills, if you will give me the pleasure of your acquaintance, I shall be very happy to accept it on your own conditions. I wish to be honorable. Captain Gills, apostrophe said Mr. Toots, holding back his extended hand for a moment, and therefore I am obliged to say that I cannot help thinking about Miss Dombey. It's impossible for me to make a promise not to think about her. Apostrophe, my lad, apostrophe said the captain, whose opinion of Mr. Toots was much improved by this candid avowal, a man's thoughts is like the winds, and nobody can answer for 'em for certain, any length of time together. Is it a treaty as to words? Apostrophe, as to words, Captain Gills, apostrophe returned Mr. Toots, I think I can bind myself. Apostrophe, Mr. Toots gave Captain Cuttle his hand upon it, then and there, and the captain with a pleasant and gracious show of condescension, bestowed his acquaintance upon him formally. Mr. Toots seemed much relieved and gladdened by the acquisition, and chuckled rapturously during the remainder of his visit. The captain, for his part, was not ill-pleased to occupy that position of patronage, and was exceedingly well satisfied by his own prudence and foresight. But rich as Captain Cuttle was in the latter quality, he received a surprise that same evening from a no less ingenuous and simple youth than Rob the Grinder. That artless lad, drinking tea at the same table, and bending meekly over his cup and saucer, having taken sidelong observations of his master for some time, who was reading the newspaper with great difficulty, but much dignity, through his glasses, broke silence by saying, "Oh, I beg your pardon, Captain, but you mayn't be in want of any pigeons, may you, sir?" Apostrophe apostrophe, no, my lad, apostrophe replied the captain. Because I was wishing to dispose of mine, Captain, apostrophe said Rob. Eh? Apostrophe apostrophe cried the captain, lifting up his bushy eyebrows a little. Yes, I'm going, Captain, if you please, apostrophe said Rob. Going? Where are you going? Apostrophe asked the captain, looking round at him over the glasses. What? Didn't you know that I was going to leave you, Captain? Apostrophe asked Rob, with a sneaking smile. The captain put down the paper, took off his spectacles, and brought his eyes to bear on the deserter. Oh yes, Captain, I am going to give you warning. I thought you'd have known that beforehand, perhaps, apostrophe said Rob, rubbing his hands, and getting up. If you could be so good as provide yourself soon, Captain, it would be a great convenience to me. You couldn't provide yourself by tomorrow morning, I am afraid, Captain. Could you, do you think? Apostrophe apostrophe, and you're going to desert your colors, are you, my lad? Apostrophe apostrophe said the captain, after a long examination of his face. Oh, it's very hard upon a cove, Captain, apostrophe cried the tender Rob, injured and indignant in a moment, that he can't give lawful warning, without being frowned at in that way, and called a deserter. You haven't any right to call a poor cove names, Captain. It ain't because I'm a servant, and you're a master, that you're to go and libel me. What wrong have I done? Come, Captain, let me know what my crime is, will you? Apostrophe apostrophe, the stricken grinder wept, and put his coat cuff in his eye. Come, Captain, apostrophe cried the injured youth, give my crime a name. What have I been and done? Have I stolen any of the property? Have I set the house afire? If I have, why don't you give me in charge, and try it? But to take away the character of a lad that's been a good servant to you, because he can't afford to stand in his own light for your good, what a injury it is, and what a bad return for faithful service. This is the way young coves is spiled and drove wrong. I wonder at you, Captain, I do. Apostrophe, all of which the grinder howled forth in a lachrymous whine, and backing carefully towards the door. And so you've got another berth, have you, my lad? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the captain, eyeing him intently. Yes, Captain, since you put it in that shape, I have got another berth, apostrophe cried Rob, backing more and more. A better berth than I've got here, and one where I don't so much as want your good word, Captain, which is fortunate for me, after all the dirt you throw it at me, because I'm poor, and can't afford to stand in my own light for your good. Yes, I have got another berth, and if it wasn't for leaving you unprovided, Captain, I'd go to it now, sooner than I'd take them names from you, because I'm poor, and can't afford to stand in my own light for your good. Why do you reproach me for being poor, and not standing in my own light for your good, Captain? How can you so demean yourself? Apostrophe, apostrophe, looky here, my boy, apostrophe replied the peaceful captain. Don't you pay out no more of them words. Apostrophe, well then, don't you pay in no more of your words, Captain, apostrophe retorted the roused innocent, getting louder in his whine, and backing into the shop. I'd sooner you took my blood than my character. Apostrophe, because, apostrophe pursued the captain calmly, you have heard, maybe, of such a thing as a rope's end. Apostrophe, oh, have I though, Captain? Apostrophe apostrophe cried the taunting grinder. No, I haven't. I never heard of any such a article. Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.